Meeting of the House Resources Committee to order today. Today is February 28th, 2024. We are in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Mears, Representative Armstrong, Representative Dibert, Representative McCabe, Representative Baker, and myself, Chairman Tom McKay. I'd like to thank Zach, Justin, and Ed for helping us run the meeting today. And I would like to remind everyone to please silence your cell phones. The first thing I want to do today is probably a little bit unconventional, but I'm going to offer an apology to NSTAR, Natural Gas Company. I'm not so self-important that I cannot admit my mistakes. On Monday, we had a meeting with Frank Richards of the Alaska Gasline Development Company. I asked a pretty direct question, which is typically my style, about LNG from Canada and how it related to NSTAR's parent company. I probably could have stated the question better, or perhaps maybe not ask at all, at least in committee. It came across poorly to NSTAR's management team, so for that I apologize. They're a great company, they're a great partner, and they're enormously helping our effort and our discussion on energy in Alaska. So I want to thank NSTAR for their continuing contributions to this effort and their dedication to Alaska. So I want to thank the committee for your indulgence as I make that statement. Now we're going to do House Bill 282 first, and we'll take a brief at ease while we get our other members in the room. Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record at House Resources today, and we're going to roll down the agenda and ask for a presentation from the mining industry. And let me find my place. We have today with us Karen Mathias, the Executive Director of Alaska Metal Mines, Katie Sweeney, the Executive Vice President of the National Mining Association, and Deantha Skabinski, the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. So it looks like we have Karen and Deantha at the table. So, okay, and then there's, that must be Katie on the screen. Katie, can you hear us okay? Okay, that she nodded yes, Justin, just so you know. Okay. All right, I'd like to welcome you to the House Resources Committee meeting. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Deantha Skabinski. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. We are a membership association that represents all aspects of Alaska's mining industry. I'm here at the table with my colleague, Karen Mathias, who will introduce herself in a moment. And online, as you noted, we are joined by Katie Sweeney with the National Mining Association. Karen's going to kick off the presentation today, outline the benefits of mining in Alaska. Katie will give an overview of the various federal challenges that we and barriers that we are looking at. And I will finish with looking back at what we do well here in Alaska and identify some areas for improvement to better grow our industry. So with that, I'll turn it over to Karen.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Karen Mathias. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Miners Association. I take your pardon. Yes. I'm the executive director of Alaska Metal Mines, formerly the Council of Alaska Producers, which was established in 1992 to represent the large metal mines and several advanced projects and provide accurate information about mining. We rebranded and became Alaska Metal Mines last August in order to better communicate who we are and what we do, which is producing essential minerals while prioritizing safety, environmental protection, and community partners. We often start these presentations with a reminder about how much we use minerals that are essential to our daily lives. This year, though, we wanted to start a little more high level. From a national security point of view, there's increasing concern that the United States is dependent on other countries for the essential minerals we need to build and operate our military assets. And unfortunately, China and Russia dominate the processing and production of those minerals. I'll give you an example of that mineral dependence. Each F-35 stealth fighter up at Eielson Air Force Base near Fairbanks has over 900 pounds of rare earth elements. They also, China dominates both the production and the processing of these elements. And when it comes to our military equipment, having key components controlled by a potential adversary is not wise. Presumably, this is the reason the Department of Defense is so supportive of the need to grow domestic mineral supply and production. And it's not just about national defense. The global demand for greater energy diversification and new energy technologies requires a huge increase in minerals. This slide helps to visualize that growing demand just in one category, electric vehicles. Regular cars are mostly steel. They have a fair amount of copper wiring in their electronics, lead acid batteries, and some gold and other precious metals in their catalytic converters and in the devices that help to deploy airbags. When you look at electric vehicles, they use way more copper and manganese, and their batteries use a host of other minerals, including cobalt, graphite, and lithium. And whether or not you personally want an electric vehicle, the fact is the market share is increasing in the United States because of consumer demand for low-emission vehicles, and also because of government incentives. And that production is also increasing rapidly in other countries, particularly in Europe and China. So the global demand for these minerals will increase. You might be thinking, well, just how many of these minerals are actually found in Alaska? And fortunately, the Bureau of Land Management did that research and produced this next slide. It's an impressive list. But unfortunately, of all those minerals listed, right now, only gold and silver are currently being produced in Alaska. The rest are sitting in the ground. They're waiting for more investment, more exploration, more permits, and/or feasibility studies. When it comes to feasibility studies, for example, the Department of Defense recently announced significant funding for Graphite One's feasibility study. Their project near Nome has the largest natural graphite deposit in the nation. They plan to produce and process materials for electric vehicle batteries. Graphite also has military uses. But the U.S. hasn't produced graphite since the 1950s. Instead, we import it, and China is the leading producer of graphite. Last fall, China added graphite to their list of minerals that are now subject to export controls and restrictions for national security reasons, their national security. We have a massive mineral resource in the United States, but instead of encouraging domestic production, we've allowed China to dominate the supply chain. This is a problem, and Alaska should be part of the solution.
We have a question from Representative McCabe, please.
Thanks. So on the previous slide, I don't see antimony anywhere. So I want to highlight this because we just found one of your members just found the largest antimony deposit in the U.S., I believe. Antimony is important because it hardens. Remember hearing Senator Sullivan talk about the shortage of 155 millimeter shells for the military. They use antimony to harden the lead on the nose cones of those. And China and Russia have a moratorium on them. They're the biggest producers. They won't sell to us, and the U.S. produces zero or mines zero antimony. And it just so happens that that find is at the top of West Sitna Access. So just highlights the critical need that we have for our military for these rare earth minerals. So next year we'll see antimony on there, right?
Thank
and,
you.
And West Sitna Access.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. I should have clarified that this list is minerals in electric vehicles, and I don't know if there's antimony in electric vehicles, but we have another slide later that shows various minerals throughout Alaska that's far more comprehensive.
Perfect.
So the reason that Alaska should be part of the solution is twofold. One, we have strict environmental laws. The photo on this slide is True North near Fairbanks. It used to be a mine in the early 2000s, and it has been fully reclaimed. Developing a mine in Alaska requires dozens of permits from multiple state and federal agencies, and the process takes years. Before operation can begin, a closure and reclamation plan must be approved by the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, and a financial assurance is required, and it is updated every 5 years or whenever there's a significant change, so the state can draw on funding for closure and reclamation if needed. When it comes to operations, the environmental management includes water quality and biomonitoring. There are strict reporting requirements, and the agencies have enforcement power. Our operating mines have a proven track record, and we are proud of them. The second reason that Alaska should be part of the solution is the economic and community benefits to Alaska. Alaska has a significant regional impact. Number one, we see the local government revenue. Mines are the largest property taxpayers in the city and borough of Juneau, Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the Northwest Arctic Borough. In 2022, those payments totaled $55 million. When it comes to state government revenue, again, with the 2022 numbers, when you add up all of the fees, all of the taxes, Alaska mining license tax, the corporate income tax, the fuel tax, as well as rents and royalties and payments to other state agencies, it totals almost $131 million. And of course, there's been studies that show the amount of revenue that comes in from mining is much greater than the amount spent by the state to manage the mining program. So there ends up being a net benefit that means that there's more money in the general fund that's available to other government services. We're very proud of the fact that the mines here in Alaska make a very strong effort to buy goods and services from Alaska companies. In 2022, they spent $1 billion with about 450 Alaska businesses, and those range from small operations to larger all across the state. Then, of course, there's always the jobs and training opportunities. Total, direct, indirect, and induced, there's 11,400 jobs attributed to the mining industry. 5,700 of those are direct jobs with a mining company. Altogether, that is equivalent to $1 billion in annual wages. The average is about $130,000 a year, which is more than twice the state average. We are proud of the fact that at the six large mines, 73% of the workers are Alaska residents. We would like that number to be higher. I mean, times are challenging with labor shortages and competition, but that's one of the reasons why the mines invest. In 2022, that was $2.7 million to the university programs and to vocational programs in order to provide opportunities for Alaskans to gain the skills to work in the Alaska mining industry or other industries. And one of the other benefits of mining being spread out throughout the state is that there are people who work in the mining industry in more than 90 communities across Alaska. So those good-paying, family-supporting jobs are very well distributed across the state and making differences in those communities. When it comes to mining that's done on ANCSA land, the Red Dog Mine has been contributing royalties that are then shared under ANCSA through 7I and 7J since it began operating in 1989. And that those royalties are distributed to every regional corporation and then on down to village corporations. That's totaled $1.8 billion since 1999 to 2022. The amount in 2022 was $266 million. So production of minerals at Red Dog has had an economic benefit to every Native corporation across the state. And then my last slide, we'd like to highlight the fact that our mines care deeply about the communities in which they operate and the state as a whole. In 2022, $4.5 million was contributed to more than 280 Alaska nonprofits. That ranges to, you know, from the smallest amount to perhaps sponsor a local sports team, all the way up to the $1 million funding that Kinross announced in 2022 for the Trotheta Indigenous Studies Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And that is the last slide I have. I'd like to now pass it over to Katie Sweeney, who's going to talk about some of the federal challenges that make it more difficult for us to mine or increase mining in Alaska.
Thank you. Hi, can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. For the record, my name is Katie Sweeney, and I am Executive Vice President and COO of the National Mining Association. The National Mining Association is the only national trade organization that serves as the voice of the U.S. mining industry and the hundreds of thousands of American workers it employs before Congress, the federal agencies, the judiciary, and the media, advocating for public policies that will help America fully and responsibly utilize its vast natural resources. Headquartered in Washington, D.C., the National Mining Association has a membership of nearly 300 companies and organizations that are involved in every aspect of mining, from producers and equipment manufacturers to service providers. And I really want to thank you all for the opportunity to present today on some of the national policies that are impeding mining across the country and in your state. Next slide, please. Clearly, and as Karen already noted, Alaska is a prime example of the U.S. Mineral Endowment, with world-class mineral deposits of strategic and critical minerals. With an amazing workforce and experienced regulators, it seems like it should be a slam dunk that Alaska would be a global destination for mineral exploration and development investment. The demand definitely exists and is growing at a staggering rate. In fact, we are entering the most mineral-intensive time in history as countries around the globe race to electrification. And there's never been more bipartisan interest at the national level in minerals issues and supply chain security. As many experts, including Benchmark Minerals, have predicted, we will need nearly 400 mines by 2035, and that's just for electric vehicles. So why isn't more mining happening here at home, where we have world-class environmental, health, and safety regulations? The answer is we are lacking the policies and sometimes the political will to unleash mining's potential. As an example, in the 3 years since the last presidential election, there have only been 6 mines or mine expansions major enough to require an environmental impact analysis approved by this administration. Part of this is attributable to the pure bureaucracy associated with the federal permitting process. It can take 7 to 10 years to navigate the tens to 100 local, state, and federal permits needed to begin operations. And that does not include the usual additional time for litigation. Next slide, please. So at a time where regulatory certainty or knowing the rules of the road couldn't be more important, let's dive into some of the federal issues impacting the mining landscape. Starting with the recommendations of the White House Interagency Working Group on Mining Law, Regulations, and Permitting, while not every one of the 65 recommendations that were released in September are detrimental, the top line sends the wrong signals to mining companies and investors. The administration remains adamant that the current framework of regulations is insufficient to protect our resources. Among the more problematic recommendations of the Interagency Working Group are conversion of the locatable system to a leasing system that allows the federal government more authority to say no to mining projects, imposition of punitive royalties and fees, rates of which are going to negatively impact investments and are likely to apply to existing claims, and imposition of a 7 cent per ton tax on volume of material or dirt displaced at mine sites that would apply to locatable minerals regardless of whether they're located on federal, state, or even private land. Next slide, please.
Can I interrupt you just for a moment? We've been joined by Representative Wright, Representative Sadler, and Representative Rauscher. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the only reason the Interagency Working Group included potential permitting improvements is they were tasked by Congress to identify permitting impediments and suggest solutions. But most of the Interagency Working Group permit recommendations are low-hanging improvements, like project tracking, having consistent application requirements, the broadened use of the Nevada Bureau of Land Management permitting process model, which has been shown to reduce permitting timeframes, pre-application meetings, and greater coordination amongst agencies. Ultimately, Congress has tried to take matters into its own hands and institute major permitting reforms throughout 2023, and those conversations continue today. There was some success with the bipartisan passage of the Fiscal Responsibility Act in mid-2023. This landmark law contained the first major amendments to the National Environmental Policy Act since it was enacted in 1970 and is intended to promote timely, concise, and effectively coordinated reviews as an answer to the NEPA process that has become lengthy, inefficient, and unduly driven by litigation. Specifically, the Fiscal Responsibility Act limits the scope of environmental impact statements and environmental assessments to reasonably foreseeable impacts to the environment. It places 2 and 1 year limits on those documents with page limits, establishes a process for determining a lead agency, allows for project proponents to do their own environmental impact assessment or environmental analysis under the supervision of the lead agency, and narrows the definition of major federal action. Next slide, please. However, the Council on Environmental Quality recently proposed its Phase 2 NEPA changes to supplement the 2022 rollback of the very favorable 2020 NEPA reforms. If finalized as proposed, this rule would fail to respect the strong bipartisan spirit that drove the Fiscal Responsibility Act NEPA amendments and would fail to effectively improve and further reform the permitting process. For example, the proposed rule undermines the Fiscal Responsibility Act's page requirements for environmental analyses by allowing agencies to provide excuses to approve documents that exceed those page limits under the guise of improving agency flexibility. The proposed rule provides federal agencies with no tools and creates no path forward to meeting statutory deadlines in the Fiscal Responsibility Act. When Congress amended NEPA in that act, it continued to focus on the process where effects and alternatives are identified, considered, and disclosed, not on substantive outcomes. I think the proposed purpose of the new rule in comparison to the existing purpose is very telling. The proposed purpose states that NEPA is the basic national charter for protection of the environment, while the existing purpose merely indicates that NEPA is a procedural statute intended to ensure agencies consider the environmental impacts of their actions in the decision-making process. So it doesn't determine outcomes. It just determines the process for considering impacts. Next slide, please. While the administration is slow to permit any new mines, it has worked rapidly to put additional lands off limits to mining operations. So far, it has put nearly 4.5 million acres off limits for mining, over 3.5 million of those through the President's use of the Antiquities Act, the most recent example being the nearly 1 million acres expansion of the existing buffer zone outside the Grand Canyon. And the Department of Interior has already put off over 800,000 acres through the Federal Land Policy and Management Act withdrawals, and that includes the withdrawal of the world-class deposit of Twin Metals Project in Minnesota. And that 4.5 million acre number doesn't encompass other indirect threats from this administration that could result in de facto withdrawals, including the Bureau of Land Management's Conservation and Landscape Health Proposal, which elevates conservation over development on federal lands, and that is likely to be finalized in the next couple of months. There are also individual resource management plan updates that are ongoing. They mirror a lot of what's in the BLM's conservation rule approach. And just to give you one example, just one resource management plan in Wyoming would close more than 3.5 million acres to coal mining and nearly 2 million acres to hard rock mining. And this same conservation rules theme is echoed in the Forest Service's climate resilience efforts. And then, of course, there's also the administration's 30 by 30 or America Beautiful initiative with the goal of conserving at least 30% of our lands and water by 2030. Next slide, please. Another impediment is the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Comprehensive Power Plant Strategy, which is a coordinated regulatory assault on coal power that involves a suite of rulemakings involving air, water, and waste. The interstate transport rule to limit ozone emissions ranks as the latest threat, with the potential retirement of over 48 gigawatts of capacity in just a few years. Despite EPA's acknowledgement that these rules are part of a broader regulatory strategy, the agency has failed to conduct any kind of cumulative impact analysis of these coordinated activities. They also continue to ignore clear warnings from the nation's grid reliability regulators, grid operators, and other experts about the dangers of forced coal plant closures. With increased electrification, as in our economy and population expand, our need for electricity will continue to grow. Coal resources are vital to supplying electricity at a reasonable price and in an environmentally sound manner to American consumers. Coal remains a workhorse fuel for power generation, 20% in 2022 and 17% in 2023. Coal will continue to be called upon to meet the nation's power needs, even assuming ambitious growth scenarios are met for electricity generation from renewables and natural gas energy sources. Next slide, please. And I couldn't talk to the Alaska legislature without talking about EPA's water, the U.S. or WOTUS rule. Clean water and clear rules. That's what the mining industry needs, so we can comply with the law, permit the mining projects our nation needs, and protect water quality in our communities. But for far too long, confusing regulations that change with every new political administration and conflicting court decisions have led to increased uncertainty for our industry. This roller coaster of changing regulations and court decisions makes it difficult for the mining industry to move forward with the projects needed to support the nation's infrastructure development, energy production, and supply chain independence. In 2020, we finally had a clear rule that actually worked on the ground, but the Biden administration changed the rules again, with a rule so vague and broad it will be nearly impossible to implement consistently. It relied on the confusing significant nexus test for determining the scope of federal jurisdiction that could allow the agencies to assert federal jurisdiction over almost any water feature in the nation. I know something that's extremely alarming in Alaska, where there is so much water. Unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court provided some clarity in a recent court case that struck down that overly broad significant nexus test. But the agencies are back at it with a post-Sackett case final rule called the conforming rule, but it still suffers from many of the same legal and practical flaws and is creating uncertainty and backlogs with lack of transparency and inconsistencies on implementation. And litigation on this final rule, the new final rule, continues. And then finally, my last slide, I just wanted to show what a regulatory onslaught like we have experienced over the last few years means to our pocketbooks. It's not that the American public doesn't want or deserve a clean and safe environment, but at the same time, leaders need to seek innovative solutions that impose the least burden on taxpayers. And I'm happy to answer any questions or turn it over to Deantha.
Okay, thank you, Vice President Sweeney. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sweeney, just on your last slide, just curious, how did you calculate the cost? $452 billion, $36 billion? $228 billion, those are big numbers. Just curious, what was your methodology for arriving at those calculations or assumptions?
So those are borrowed, and it's attributed on the bottom of the slide. It's the American Action Forum, and they have been collecting this data for decades and so that they can compare amongst the different administrations. And the tool that they use is the Federal Register that where all the final federal rules are published. And then the data for the cost and the paperwork hours are in the background documents for each of those rulemakings. The agency that proposes and finalizes the rule has to identify, to the best that they can, quantify what the cost and what the paperwork burdens are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions from members? All right, seeing none, I'd like to thank Executive Director Mathias, Executive Vice President Sweeney, and Executive Director Skubinski for the presentations today. Thank you for coming, and you have a comment.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a comment. I'm the last presenter on the slide deck.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't know there was more. I'm sorry.
It's quite all right. And you're a fantastic staff person. Ed passed me a note that said 10 minutes, so I'm going to speak quickly. I know you guys have other business to get to.
So please put your name on the record and begin your presentation.
Again, Deantha Skubinski, Alaska Miners Association. And I'm going to bring it back to the state level. Katie outlined our challenges at the federal level and why we as Alaskans don't have a lot of control over most of those. As a state, we're doing a really great job on statehood defense, things like the actual formalized statehood defense unit that coordinates agency efforts on all of the onslaught and negative federal actions. Senator Dan Sullivan noted in his address to you last week that we are up to 56 Alaska-specific negative actions. That doesn't even count those nationwide actions with broad impacts, particularly that disproportionately affect Alaska given our vast federal acreage. There are lawsuits that the state is participating in against many of these actions because they're illegal and they violate important laws like ANILCA. There are actions to assert ownership over our navigable state waters, and we want to thank you, the legislature, for the funding of things like reestablishing the Citizens Advisory Council in federal areas and extending the Alaska Minerals Commission. These are important bodies affiliated with the state that perform statehood defense efforts and highlight our issues there. And then shifting to promotion, as a state, we're really doing a great job of promoting Alaska as a smart place to do business and bragging and boasting about the great job we do here in terms of developing resources responsibly. Having representatives of the state and the legislature and the university and other public members brag about the good job we do protecting the environment and how we operate with high social values that benefit people and communities, it really is a very valuable thing for all industries. We are also doing a great job educating and preparing our future workforce. Long-time partnerships between the state and industry and education and training entities have resulted in some significant progress in terms of growing our own. Creative opportunities like the Mining Education Tax Credit leverages private funds to do this kind of training and education, and support of the Alaska Resource Education Program has resulted in sparking interest in working in these industries and understanding these industries much earlier in children's lives. So we thank you for your support in that realm as well. Pointing out some other areas where we really shine here at home. First is our relationship with communities and our partnerships with our communities. Alaska's mines are really the foundation of communities and regions they operate in, and we really need to look no further than the Red Dog Mine and its transformation of Northwest Alaska. Here in Juneau, the mines here are the largest taxpayers and private sector employers. Interior Alaska is anchored by its three large mines and dozens of placer mines. And even in projects, even at projects that aren't mines quite yet, such as the Donlin Gold Project in Southwest Alaska, their investment in the region in terms of jobs and training and other benefits has been life-changing. And if you look at this photo on the top, this is a photo from their 2023 backhaul project. This is where Donlin went out and sponsored four programs that went through 26 villages in the region. They collected approximately 235,000 pounds of electronic and other heavy waste. It took it out of the communities and sent it offsite for proper disposal. So things that are really meaningful. Taking it to the state and partnerships with the state, we've got two unique state-related things to share with you today. One of them is our Alaska Mental Health Trust structure, where we use resource potential lands to take care of our mental health patient needs. It's a really creative and brilliant structure that we have in place, and it is the envy of other states. There's really no other state that has set up this kind of system to take care of its mental health patients. We're really proud that the Fort Knox Mine is by far the largest contributor into the trust, we're really proud of that. And the other is the Office of Project Management and Permitting, or as short-term, OPMP. This is housed within DNR, but OPMP does permit coordination amongst all of the different agencies for something like a mine or something like a gas line across, you know, DNR, the Environmental Conservation, Department of Fish and Game. They have interagency coordination to do permit coordination, and they also oversee the reimbursable service agreements, or RSAs. When Karen reported earlier about how the state brings in more money from the industry that it costs to manage, a lot of that is due to our reimbursable service agreements, where the OPMP coordinates invoicing mining projects and others that enter into RSAs, so it doesn't cost the state to do the management of them. We've also, for many decades, excelled in our relationships and partnerships with Alaska Native corporations. The formation of ANCSA and the structure of ANCs has fostered long-term success for Alaska Native people and communities. And I can tell you this system is really looked fondly upon by the rest of the world. My national and international colleagues, we get compliments all the time where they say, you guys really did it right with that. And it's a model that we should all be really proud of. And last but certainly not least is our relationship with you, the legislature. For many years now, you've provided us with this opportunity to come in and do this annual mining update. And you are frequently reaching out to us to say, how can we get more mining in Alaska? What can we do to improve? And you invest your time in coming to our operations and seeing them for yourself. This bottom photo is a tour that took place last August to Usabelli Coal Mine. And last year, every large mine from Juneau to Red Dog facilitated tours. We had over 40 legislators and staff attend those. It's a big ask on your time. It's a long day, but there is no substitute for seeing the operations for yourself, and we really appreciate your investment to understand more about our operations.
One quick question. Sure. On the e-waste in the upper left corner, I don't need to know now, but I'd love to know the composition of that shipment, where it went, how it was disposed of, what it cost, and who paid for it. Sometime. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir. We'll get you that answer. So getting to what we can do better. Most of what I tell you in the next couple of slides in this arena is going to come as absolutely no surprise. Alaska is an incredibly costly place to explore and to build and to operate a mine. And two of the largest cost drivers are our lack of infrastructure and the energy costs. You've probably heard Karen and I say before that if any of our advanced exploration projects that are in place right now were located next to the interstate in Nevada, they'd already be an operating mine. Our lack of roads and corridors and ports and broadband really does put us at a significant disadvantage when it comes to bringing more mines online. And it's something as a state we've got to address and come up with long-term solutions. It's no different for energy. Mines are incredibly energy intensive, and the availability and reliability and cost are a barrier to growing more mining in Alaska. Again, no big surprises, with the state's challenges being our challenges. Housing in communities where mines are located remains a major issue. When a worker making the great wages that Karen outlined earlier in the mining industry struggles to find suitable housing for their families, we know we have major community problems. For the mining industry, it poses a threat of that employee relocating out of state to a place where the housing is much more desirable and potentially even losing that employee entirely. That adds to the problem of having a skilled labor pool. We have significant challenges with attrition and aging within our current workforce, as other industries do as well, and we need to be doing everything we can to retain our workers. That goes right into childcare challenges, and there's been a lot of discussion about that, but obviously a great deal of our mining jobs aren't work from home, and we too need reliable childcare. So simply put from this slide, making our communities places that people want to live and have the amenities they need to live, work, and play there is a priority for all Alaskans, including us.
Representative Mears has a question.
Thank you, through the chair. Again, not for now, but I'd love to know how much of a change there's been in employment and workforce living out of state rather than being Alaska residents.
Representative Mears, through the chair, thank you. We'll get back to you on that. So finally, an area that the state really does have the power to improve upon. Companies that are contemplating investing in Alaska mining projects are watching the discussion regarding a balanced budget in Alaska. And frankly, our lack of a long-term fiscal plan does create uncertainty for investors, and it makes Alaska look like a fragile jurisdiction. As you know, our worker shortage issues have bled over to public employees as well. And we need to ensure that our permitting agencies at the state are adequately funded so that skilled personnel are permitting and overseeing mining projects in Alaska and carrying out the management of our stringent regulatory process. And further, it benefits all of us to have those skilled workers in place and have the resources they need to promote and defend our processes so the public can hear that directly from them and have trust in the process. And finally, we can ensure reasonable permitting policies and look within our own agencies and departments to ensure that our statutes and regulations that apply to resource development are meeting their mission, their very important mission of protecting the environment and human health, but also not unnecessarily burdening projects. And of course, Karen and I stand to work with agencies on where those areas can be improved. So this is my last slide, and I just want to share with you that within the industry, we've observed that mining is in the spotlight like never before. Never in our careers have we had so much discussion with people that never, ever pay attention to mining issues. And they have started to care about, oh, I know why I need minerals. I know that sometimes they come from bad places. And there really is a household discussion now. We as an industry have not enjoyed this level of interest in a very long time. So if the public is so interested, and if mining is in the spotlight like this, this is really the time for Alaska to leverage our mineral endowment. I like how Katie put that. Alaska should be a slam dunk in terms of getting more mining products done in the USA. And again, thank you so much for the opportunity to brief you all today.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Skibinski. Any more questions from members? I enjoyed your previous bullet about that we are possibly a fragile jurisdiction. I may use that line. Actually, at the floor session at 2:30 today.
Yeah. Hopefully, we won't have to say that forever.
Representative McCabe has a question.
Just like to note for the record that Ms. Skibinski is my constituent. So, well spoken from Big Lake. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
We may have to name a mineral after Representative McCabe.
Antimony.
Antimony is no longer antimony. McCabe-amony. Okay, thank you, ladies, so much for your presentation. Okay, so we're supposed to have floor at 2:30. I think we should try to finish at 2:20 to give everybody time to get back up there. So I would like to roll back up the calendar. We will not hear SB 92 today. That relates to navigable waters, but it would be really good if we could pass out HB 282 related to land sales. And I understand that after many weeks of patience and deliberation, there has been an agreement between the parties so that HB 282 could be passed without any conflict. I believe that's the case. I hope that's the case. That's what I was told. So I'd like to bring HB 282 back before the committee, and we are supposed to open it for public testimony. And Mr. Goodrum, and do you want to come forward? So I will now open HB 282 for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I will now close public testimony on HB 282. I believe we have one amendment on 282. Amendment number one, which is labeled 33GH2634A.1, brought forward by Representative Mears. Representative Mears, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment A.1.
Okay, and I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Representative Mears, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment comes from work that was done in the other body and an amendment adopted over there. It brings this House bill more in compliance so that when we do get to reconciling the two bills, they're more in the line. What it basically does is it's been described as more of a belt and suspenders instead of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and indeed may ask DNR if they want to take over the sales. It says that they shall give them notice to be able to do that. It's a little bit more of a safety valve, and I think it's going to provide more opportunities for discussions on workload and being able to balance this disposition.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mears. For the department, is there any objection to the amendment?
For the record, Rachel Longacre, Chief of Operations for the Department of Natural Resources. The administration is neutral to the amendment. It is a conforming amendment for the other body, and we do not have a negative impact.
Okay, very well. Are there any questions from members on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, I remove my objection to the amendment. And is there any other objection? Hearing none, then Amendment 1 is adopted. Thank you, Representative Mears. So now we move to the main bill. Get back on track here. Is there any final questions or discussion on the main bill as amended? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Bill 282, Work Order 33-GH2634/A, as amended from the committee with individual recommendations to previously attached fiscal notes and the authority for legal services to make conforming and technical changes.
Okay, any final questions or comments? There are objections. No objections? All right, hearing no objections, without objection, HB 282 has been reported from the committee with individual recommendations and two previously attached fiscal notes. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Keep going. All right, my staff tells me what to do. Continue moving along. Thank you, everyone. Next, we will take up HB 296, as known as the Crop Act. And I'll bring the bill back before the committee. We have an amendment on 296. Okay. My office received, it looks like, two amendments for consideration. Amendment number B14 by Representative Rauscher. Representative Rauscher, would you like to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, at the moment, I would like to move and offer amendment number one.
Okay. I will object for the purposes of discussion. This is Chair McKay. And Representative Rauscher, please explain your amendment.
The Chair, with your permission, I'd like to call my staffer up to explain the amendment.
Okay, very well. Mr. Valdez, please come to the table.
Chair McCabe.
This is Craig Valdez, staff to Representative Rauscher. This amendment is a identical amendment to the conceptual one made last week, requiring a report to the legislature of next year regarding procurement and other factors made to the legislature regarding the Crop Act.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions?
Oh. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, I don't know how to do this, but it is amendment number 6. It's okay. Not amendment number 1
all right.
At this point in the game.
You shall label so it an amendment number 6.
Number 1 today, 6 in all.
Okay.
So I don't know whether I need to remove it or you all just be happy with the fact knowing which one it is.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'd appreciate a more precise definition. I've got a couple blank amendments without numbers. If you could read the indication in the upper right-hand corner, just so we have a precise idea of which amendment we're speaking of, please.
Representative Sadler, it appears to be 33-GH2386B.14.
Very good. And that's designated?
Amendment number 6.
Thank you very much.
Everybody with us? Okay. I was just notified that floor has been postponed to 3:15, so I can relax a little bit and we can get this done. Okay, so are there any questions for the sponsor of the amendment from members? Representative Armstrong.
Thank you, through the chair. Does the department anticipate there being any cost associated with this, or would you be able to complete the report with existing resources?
Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, is it all right if I just generally speak about it? And I think I've got a answer for you in here. So Amendment 6 is an additional reporting requirement, this time led by the Director of the Division of Agriculture in collaboration with the Chief Procurement Officer to render recommendations on how state procurement processes, policies, or regulations may be amended to purchase greater quantities of agricultural products in the state. The department would note that this amendment would increase the fiscal impact of the bill, and the department is concerned that the state procurement arena in general is beyond the scope of the Division of Agricultural's expertise.
Okay. Representative Armstrong, make sure we get your question answered first.
Thank you. Follow-up, may I ask, does that mean you do not support the amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, we know this is an area that needs more work. We, at the Department of Natural Resources, believe that this is probably better suited in other arenas. I believe that there are other conversations looking kind of at this topic that are probably better suited. To deal with it, and so I would say we're probably like to find a different path.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can enlighten you to a path that is being explored for this with the Food Strategy Task Force work we are doing. That is work that my office is pursuing. We recognize that procurement from the state of Alaska is a very powerful tool, and we need to understand a little bit more about what is effective about the current policy and what we can change to make some real meaningful changes. It would probably mean next year. Hopefully we will have another omnibus bill dealing with food security issues, and I look forward to working on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mears. So, Representative Rauscher, it appears we have a little bit of a conflict. Do you want to continue pursuing Amendment 6?
Mr. Chairman, I had already decided before I came here to withdraw the amendment, but I thought it needed to be discussed.
Okay,
so
very well.
It was important enough to have the discussion, and I am prepared to withdraw the amendment at this time.
Okay, very well. Representative Sadler?
Thank you for that. And through the chair to Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, I was my ears pricked up when you questioned the ability of the state procurement officer to do this kind of work. If you can expand on that just a little bit, a bit more resources needed, higher level of qualifications, just I just want to probe that a little bit, please.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, this was supposed to be led by the director of the Division of Agriculture in conjunction with the chief procurement officer. You know, procurement statewide is a big issue, and to have this amendment, which contemplated the division director of agriculture reaching out statewide to a lot of different places seemed far beyond the scope of what we need our Division of Ag currently focused on. And so that was, just as Representative Mears said, this is a big topic that has a lot of different tentacles. And so I was concerned that at our division level, that was far beyond the scope of what our director needs to be focused on in the growing season that's coming up and then reporting back to you all next January.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Okay.
So, Representative Rusher.
Yeah, I'm digging the chance that I was able to be a majority leader, but I believe the answer to the question was directed to Representative Satter.
Okay. For the record.
Okay, so I removed my objection, and Representative Rauscher has removed or withdrawn Amendment 6. Okay, so now I have before me Amendment 7. And just so everyone has the right one, it's 33-GH2386B15. Okay. And Amendment 7 is brought forward. Oh, there's not a name on it. Who brought it, Amendment 7?
See.
Excuse me. Oh, okay, Representative Mears, thank you. So would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment Number 7, also known as B.15.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mears, and I object for the purposes of discussion. Representative Mears, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was an amendment that we were taking a little bit more time with from the last time we considered amendments in consultation with the department and in response to some public comments that we had with the Food Strategy Task Force. There's definitely a gap between getting things from farm to table, and manufacturing is a big part of that. We're not just looking at food for people, but also feed for animals. So we've included that in there. We've clarified the definition to make sure that manufacturing was included, since it wasn't perfectly clear in the first version of the bill. We were having some discussions on a requirement for Alaska grown, but considering that this is being included in the revolving loan fund, we don't know where people are going to be with the startup of their businesses. And really, the manufacturing of food in Alaska has got greater benefits, even if it does include Alaska grown. We'll continue to look at this and see if we can incorporate that in the future. But at this point, I'm very happy with where this amendment is so that we can increase our local manufacturing of food and entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mears. Representative Sadler has a question.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the maker of the amendment, I want to clarify, this is production of animal feed is one thing, and then manufacture food for presumably for human beings is the other thing. So my question would be, can you give some idea, this big question, the size or value of food production for humans in Alaska and production of animal feed for Alaska? You know, we're proposing to allow ARLF to make loans to this. I just want to see how big of a market we might be lending into.
Thank you, through the chair. I don't have that scope in front of me. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, Representative Rauscher has a comment.
Mr. Chair, through the chair, I was just wondering what DNR has to say about the amendment.
Thank you. For the record, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, through the chair. Amendment 7 adds to the purposes for which the Board of Agriculture and Conservation may make loans. The amendment adds the purpose of in-state manufacturing of food or production of animal feed. While the amendment stops short of expressing any requirements for the use of Alaska-grown products, it is the belief of the department that this amendment would still serve to promote the more rapid development of agriculture as an industry throughout the state. The department is supportive of the amendment.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Very well. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'd like to ask Deputy Commissioner Goodrum my same question earlier. Any idea the size of the market we would be offering authorizing the loan fund to make loans to?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I will probably offer the same answer back that I heard Representative Mears make. I believe it's not understood at this moment.
And
follow up?
I would just offer concern. I'm not sure we are enhancing the ability of the loan size, the amount of money available to lend. I'm not sure if that's going to go. I'm trying to get some sense of how much is going to go to the existing development of farms, clearing land, et cetera, and how much it might go to the new in-state manufacturer of food and animal feed, which I support, but I just want to make sure that we are not providing too much money or not enough money. So, thank you.
Maybe one follow-on comment for me, Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, for the record. I mean, we are trying to look at value-added products, you know, that could expand additional opportunities for hopefully agricultural products that are developed here in Alaska. And so if we add more to that value chain and opportunities, you know, we may be able to find more markets, and then where you kind of have a demand for that, you may, you know, see more supply, more people incentivized to develop more of that. So I think that's, we're interested in seeing where this would go. And I do understand that we don't fully understand, you know, who may come knocking on the door, but they won't knock unless we provide an opportunity for us to get a sense of that.
Okay. Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Sadler. It's my recollection that the revolving loan fund is currently underutilized. So having opportunity for larger amounts and more much needed manufacturing and included in here will be beneficial to the state.
Okay. Are there any final questions or comments on the amendment number 7? Hearing none, I remove my objection. And without further, let's see, we go to our vice chairman for a motion.
Yes, brief at ease while I correct the motion now that there's an amendment.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Mr. Vice Chairman, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move and report the committee substitute for HB 296 work order 33-GH2386/B as amended from the committee with individual recommendations, 3 attached fiscal notes, and authority for legal services to make technical and conforming changes.
Okay, hearing no objection. Committee substitute for House Bill 296 resources has been reported from the committee with individual recommendations and 4 attached fiscal notes. Thank you very much, everyone, for that. And we need to sign paperwork, Committee Aide King. So I think that concludes our business for today. Thank you very much for your good work and cooperation. Our next meeting will be Friday at 1 o'clock. March 1st. So I will adjourn us at 2:31.